Welcome to the Good Manners Map with me, Monique Chambers, and my guest this week is Merle-Louise Whale from South Africa.
Good day. Sawubona.
Ah, okay. I haven't had that greeting before. Thank you. So you've been in Malta a while now.
Yes, I've been here about 13 years now. Came here kicking and screaming, didn't even know where Malta was, and then discovered that just love it. And we've got a lovely South African community here. Very similar cultures, interestingly enough. I think the South Africans have got similar history to Malta. We've been invaded. We've been occupied. We've been, our culture's been taken over by different countries. So, yeah, we've got a great group here and love it here.
So you still manage to do the things that you would do at home, and obviously the climate's pretty similar
as
well. Yes, maybe we don't have quite the wildlife.
Yeah, we have it in a different way, maybe in Portugal, but not...
Oh, that's a good one. So how do you keep the culture alive? Is it the community gets together very often? Is it
quite a few things. Yes. In fact, what happens is it's very kind of informal. I mean, sometimes, as we know, as expats, you wouldn't necessarily socialize with those same people at home. But something draws you together when you're in an island in the middle of the Mediterranean, coming from a population of 69 million down to 700,000 or something.
Yeah.
So we kind of gather by virtue of interests. We have groups. We have women's groups. We have children, or parents. We have newbies that arrive that are all enthusiastic. And we have those that say, oh, no, not another one coming in, wants to change the world.
Oh, bless.
Our traditional things are very much along the barbecue line, which we call braai place. We love our meat. We are big, big meat eaters, South Africans in general. And bear in mind that South Africans are made up of a rainbow nation.
Mm-hmm.
We have 11 languages, of which now the 12th has just been added, which is sign language official languages. So, we bring together an eclectic mix of people.
So tell us a bit more about the braai, because I'm actually really hungry. So
If you hear
food.
The tummy rumbling, that's mine too. Yes, of course, meat is a big part of it. Fresh vegetables. It's normally in terms of the braai, if one considers the history, if we look back at the times of the kraal, when the Afrikaner or the Boer was going into the north of Africa, trekking as we know it, as well as the African traditions around the fireplace, making sorghum making pap and vleis, as we call it. It's a very big tradition of bringing together something that you're proud of or sharing and making whatever you got stretched miles and miles, like a coleslaw might start off with 2 carrots and ends up being 2 cabbages, 6 carrots, as the people arrive. We've got some traditional sweets that we love, such as milk tart. We've got a dough that is deep fried called a cook sister and then dripped in treacle.
Ooh, that sounds yummy.
Yes.
Is that sort of thing you can make while you're away as well?
Yes, we do. In fact, we've got some lovely ladies to keep the tradition going. In fact, we also have a lady who's a butcher. She was a butcher up in the north of Africa for a while, and she organizes our boerewors, which is a similar traditional Maltese sausage. It's just a little bit more flavorful. It's not as spicy.
Okay.
So that's very common.
What's the typical meat then?
Well, we like to have, we really like beef. We're very much into our beef and lamb.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the Karoo lamb is one of the most famous in the world for the most tasty, because they eat the fauna, they eat the beautiful grasslands around. So they kind of spice themselves for us. And so we like that a lot. And steak is a big issue for us. Our other traditional meat is biltong, spelled B-I-L-T-O-N, otherwise known as jerky.
Yeah.
Which we really, really enjoy as well. And it comes back to the traditions of them moving around and having to have food that lasts and, can just be, we didn't have fridges or ice-cusses, as you call them,
So do you have a braai, because your weather is pretty similar the whole year round.
Yes, you don't
really have much of a winter.
We do. The Cape will have similar to the Maltese winter with the rain and the winds, depending on where you are. I mean, South Africa is such a vast country.
True.
We have snow, then we've got desert areas.
So is the braai at a particular time of year?
Braai can happen anytime to braai. You can come home and put a steak on the braai. You will have braai because you're watching rugby. You'll have braai because everybody's swimming. You'll have braai because you've got the elections. You'll have braai because you've got a thing happening in the community. Braai anytime.
So is it something as well that you would do around major traditions? Like, would you have a braai at your wedding, for example?
Not so much then. In those kind of environments, it would be more of a formal environment. And depending on the type of wedding, I mean, I'm not saying you wouldn't, but there seems to have been a bit of a following of the Western cultures as far as weddings are concerned in most environments. However, in some of the ethnic traditions, particularly the Zulu weddings, they, you know, like you have an Indian wedding, what could over 10 days, they'll have different kinds of things. So one will be presenting your wife to the family, the other would be the family accepting your wife, the other would be introducing, you know, your work colleagues, and for each of these they wear different outfits. It's just absolutely remarkable, you know?
Wonderful, all those different dresses.
Cost a fortune though. But
and then the food would be different. It'd be each at each occasion, they would be trying to up the game.
Yes.
Showing their best sort of thing.
For example, we have with weddings, we have something called a lobola, which means that I suppose in many people's environments, they'd consider it a dowry.
Okay.
Where you'd be worth 2 cows or 20 goats or whatever. And once that's paid up or presented, there'd be a whole procession about, okay, now he's paid for the wife, he's proven he can look after her, he's given the family their due, they'd have a ceremony then, you know, and different kinds of things would happen in those environments.
And so if you were invited to such a wedding, what would be expected of you, not being from the culture? Because this program's all about, you know, when we travel or when we meet people from different parts of the world, you know, how not to offend, really, and how to get it right and how to turn up with the right things in our hands and the right clothes on our body. So what would one expect and what would one have to wear and take with them?
I don't think there's any hard and fast rule. I mean, to give you an example, I had somebody who worked for me for a while and invited me to the wedding, and I thought, okay, great. I went along, found out what I needed to do, and then discovered I'd been seated at the main table because they had such respect, you know. And then you're like, okay, now how do I do it? And then I have to be honest, they were serving a meal that I don't normally eat. It was a goat that they put under the ground and they leave it to ferment, and it's a particular process. And it was extremely embarrassing. But yeah, I found a way to get it in my throat.
What's that called, just so we can look out for it?
I can't actually remember. Okay. I can't tell you that at all. But generally speaking, South Africans are very, very welcoming in every way possible. Unless you support the wrong rugby team, a bit like the footballers here in Malta.
So rugby's the serious thing of the year.
Rugby's a serious, cricket's a serious. We play soccer, not football. Soccer's very, very popular in terms of the sports. Tennis, it's an outdoor country, so we have a lot of that. Athletics, I mean, our champions have been doing very well at the Olympics lately. Swimming.
Uh-huh. Excellent. So, but rugby?
That seems to unite the nation. Yes.
Or divide.
Yes, correct. Unites us if we're playing against somebody. I mean, famously, Nelson Mandela came onto the Rugby World Cup set in 1994, just after the elections, and he wore a rugby jersey, and that really brought together a lot of the cultures. Now, we also currently have an African, black African captain, which has really united the nation, because it was kind of considered an elitist sport at some stage, but now it really, really, I even get goosebumps now, if that's a word that you get, talking about the excitement that builds up around it.
So when's the season for rugby? Because I don't actually, I'm afraid.
The whole year.
Oh, the whole year, okay.
I mean, typically it's a winter sport, but like now, for example, the team are travelling around to Australia. They played England. I mean, in fact, the end of the year, now November, they're playing again. So our arch rivals are often the North versus the South, you know.
Right, okay. And then, you go through to the world and then everyone follows. So that would be a whole family coming together, or bunches of guys, whatever, coming together, doing the braai, watching the match, screaming at the TV.
Absolutely,
that kind of thing.
Yeah. Absolutely. The children would be dressed up, presenting themselves as rugby players.
Oh, bless. And no matter how much you shout at the TV, they don't listen.
No, they do
their own thing. No. Yeah, that happens. So you're talking about children there. How are children perceived in South Africa when there's a child born into the family? You know, how does it go?
It's a very, very interesting question, that one, and often asked. It really depends very much on the culture of that particular family. And bear in mind that there's a mix of cultures within the families as well. Children are really, really highly regarded, although to some degree are also how can I say, abused in the sense of, and I don't mean that in a bad way, I just mean as in, okay, well, the more children we've got, the more wealthy we're going to be, because the more labola we're going to get and the more people can work on the farm.
I see, okay, yeah, yeah.
Which I think in some countries, you know, has been a reality. You've got to groom the workforce. But yes, typically the mother's left for a while, depending, and I think to some degree it's a bit sad because there was much more of a community spirit around that. Now you see mums are left on their own, and I see that with expat mums as well. You know, they don't have that support system that they had before. Fortunately, obviously, one can use electronics now. But yeah, so when a child arrives, typically the mother is looked after. They try and make sure, obviously, the main objective would be that she's safe and healthy and can breastfeed, that the child's healthy. And, yeah, gifts are brought. They bring food to help the mother so that she doesn't have to prepare the food.
Okay, so that's a nice touch.
Making sure, obviously, that there's fresh water in the home, warmth if necessary, you know, those kinds of things.
And so then are there rites of passage once the child goes off to school and things, or is that again a cultural thing? Because there are so many cultures too.
We followed very much the Christian culture in terms of all of those aspects. Some of the interesting things that happen with children in South Africa is that they typically are carried on the back by their mothers.
Okay.
And often if you have a nanny, she will also carry the child on their back. And that has got some plus things in terms of the bonding is a marvelous thing, but it's not very good from the child's perspectives because a child doesn't always learn a 360 perspective,
okay,
and smart perspectives. So they really encourage early learning and different kinds of exposure to things. But we go through First Holy Communion, baptism. We do have some cultures that actually are a little bit dangerous, and they're trying to consolidate them within the African ethnics. It's kind of like a brisk in the Khoza tradition. But unfortunately, they're not done very sanitary, and we end up with some children and ending up with real problems because of that going wrong. You know?
Yes, yeah. So that's, not a nice one to even have to think about.
No.
And do most South Africans want to stay in South Africa, or is it something they want to travel to study and then come back? Is there like a real mix? Because some countries where the kids just don't leave, you know, they stay forever. And then there are some that you know, there are some populations you always meet an Australian. Always.
Yeah, always.
No matter where you are,
yes.
Always meet an Australian. But, you know, you very rarely actually bump into a South African.
Oh, no. I think we bump into lots of people. And typically, I mean, I'm a white South African, and people will say, oh, but you're white. Aren't you from? And no, I'm South African. I'm born in South Africa. My parents are South African. I have a South African passport, which we have a colloquial saying. We call it a green mamba, which is a very dangerous snake because you can't get anywhere with it because we have to have visas and everything. Mm. So South Africans traveling abroad go through quite a lot. They know it. I think there's a very big mixture. We're a very adventurous, creative race. And I mean, if you look at the days of apartheid, when we were cut off from the rest of the world, we were very creative. I mean, we ended up having the first world heart surgery. We turned coal into fuel. You know, there are different things that we did. So you've got a broad variety of people, some that are very tied to the ground in terms of agricultural, and that's their land and that's where they want to stay. Others that are adventurous, and you've got your everyday person who's just happy to be where they are. So we are such a rainbow nation of different people, you know.
It's a program that could probably take longer than the allocated time. But let me try, talking of time actually, are the South Africans known for being an on-time nation?
No.
Okay.
It depends. I mean, if you're in a professional environment, they do expect you to be time, you know, and five minutes early is probably late. But then we say, oh, this is African time, you know, so you kind
of... a bit chilled, a bit relaxed.
Depends, yes.
Yeah. And does that also happen when somebody is invited over for dinner, for example?
Yes, it does. And it can get very uncomfortable because obviously, as you know, if the host is preparing a meal, but it... Like, for example, if you have a braai, you can come anytime. You come and go as you wish. As long as if you need to put your meat on the braai and there's the woods come out or the coals died, well, tough for you. But if you're going to, like, for example, a formal occasion, you are expected to be on time.
And are there South Africans, we were saying about formal occasions earlier as well, do you dress up for weddings and formal occasions?
Yes.
Because you just imagine it being quite casual and quite comfortable, but you do dress up.
South Africans are a very proud nation, so they do love to dress up, but they're also very happy. We call slip-slops or flip-flops, you call them floppies, and you'll often find a guy with floppies and shorts and then a fancy shirt, you know.
It sort of takes it away.
Yes.
Yeah. But how do the women dress?
The women normally dress very nicely. And they love their colours, they like their accessories, of course they love their jewellery, always very proud of their hair and makeup and how they present themselves in terms of their... They'll take a long time to prepare themselves.
So we have to make the effort. It's not a case of you can turn up and think you're going to a beach party.
Yeah.
That's a good thing. And the same for weddings?
Yes, very much for weddings. I mean, you'll find, for example, in restaurants and that, you'll have restaurants or going to the movies, possibly even the theatre nowadays, people aren't as obsessed about it. And to some degree in business, we're finding a little bit more of a dress down. But really, it's to show respect, is to really present yourself nicely. Mm. You know?
No, I believe in that. I don't like people wearing jeans even to the theatre. I love jeans, but there's a place for them.
Exactly.
So I like the sound of this. And is there like a big fashion industry there as well? So is there lots of fabric being made and clothes being made locally?
We have had, and we did have a very, very successful fashion industry, which unfortunately then was very influenced by the purchasing power and, you know, the prices from China and that. There is a rebound of it, and the local print materials, local fashion is handmade and obviously does compete price-wise.
But unique, at least you get a unique
absolutely.
Piece.
But we have, I mean, our retail outlets have come up with some very nice everyday wearing stuff, you know, similar to the Marks and Spencers. We've got something called Pick and Pay Retailer. We've got Woolworths, which is not the same as you'd know it, but it's M&S. So we do have, and South Africans are very proud people in what they wear, you know.
And then, but aside from, so rugby shirts?
Rugby shirts, well, those can also be very fancy.
But so obviously to an everyday, would a guy wear a rugby shirt?
Yeah, just... Friday you'd wear a rugby shirt or go out with your mates, you'd wear a rugby shirt. Saturday morning going to shopping, you might wear a rugby shirt.
So they can be, you know, can be comfortable, but there is also this opportunity to dress up and show
and
off.
And show off, yeah.
That's what we like.
Support your team.
That's what we like.
Caps, they also love caps.
Ah, well, I suppose you have to as well for the weather.
Yeah.
A little bit. We were talking there about weddings and being formal. So wedding guests would dress up. What sort of gifts would be expected to be taken to a wedding?
I think that's changed so much now, and it's very difficult to say. I mean, you know, as we know, more and more people have had a life now before they get married, so they've probably already got a home. We're finding more that people are giving more experience gifts or something of personal nature, you know, not another toaster, not another... Obviously, there are, what are those, gift registries that are run. Cash is a nice gift, but you have to be very careful from a safety perspective that it's given to somebody, you know, who's going to take care of it and be of good standing on that. I think people prefer a very personalised gift.
It's a nice way to go. So it sort of shows you deserve your invite.
Exactly.
Yeah. You need to know the couple.
But there's no like minimum value or something that I've seen go around on some invitations.
I hate the ones that tell you what to wear. It's like, you decide what you wear, I'll decide what I wear. I mean, don't tell me what to
wear. I'm sorry. That's apparently very trending. They want
awful.
You to look that way for their photographs and things like that.
It's Photoshop. Anyway, before I get de-invited from every wedding. and the format of a wedding, you said, it's much more Western or in the different areas of culture, like I said, there's a 10-day sort of style where you're going around, but it's the same presenting, vows.
And it can go over a period of time. I mean, a wedding may not be 1 week or one weekend. It can go over a period of a year. So, for example, one might be, okay, now we're going to do the formal stuff in the court, and then you'll have people there. Then they're going to have something where they're presenting to the one family who live on this side of South Africa and the other family live on the other side, and then they're all coming together. So, and like now with, you know, international families, you find that people are having to have celebrations all over. So I can't say there's a hard and fast rule
to it. So you just sort of ask on the day which one you're going to and how you're supposed to.
And you see how important you are, which one you get invited to.
Ah, there's a a hierarchy.
Yeah, of course there is.
So the one with the big party is obviously the most prestigious.
Correct.
And the courthouse is the lowest, or the...
Well, not necessarily. It might be because they respect your view that you asked to the formal occasions.
Okay.
So, yeah, there is a hierarchy, but I can't say what it is because each one is also different.
And I guess, yeah, each couple puts their own importance on which bit
they
want to celebrate the highest level. So food rituals at weddings?
Cake is a big part of it, definitely a big part of
what type of cake?
I think the traditional fruit cake has been very part of it because it's a practical cake. You can make it in advance. It can be travelled. And I mean, the good old rituals of even if you can't make it to the wedding, please make sure you take a piece of cake back home for granny or somebody who couldn't make it. The cutting of the cake is a very big part of it. And that seems to go across all cultures. I suppose it's all about the coming together and the celebration and the enjoyment. And I just always love to see those pictures of couples cutting the cake and feeding each other the cake. And it is such a lovely thing. You see the little children running up to get their piece of cake and running back to take one to granny. And so I think cake is a big part of it. The food is very much a part of the social side of it. You know, it's really, food is a very social aspect of weddings.
And is there anything a little bit kooky that happens in any particular aspect of the culture? Or is it all quite formal and...
I think South Africans can be quite big alcohol consumers.
Oh, okay. So that's a different thing. Yeah. Uh-huh.
So one has to watch the behavior with that because, I mean, we're surrounded with it with our beautiful wine farms and lovely brandies and all that kind of stuff. But no, I wouldn't say there's anything kooky. I just think they're just beautiful to see weddings happen. And funny enough, I mean, I have a South African daughter and an American daughter, and both of them got married in Malta.
Okay, so they've chosen maybe to downsize, ironically.
No, just because they just love the Malta vibe. And listen, those were 5-10-day weddings.
So. Yes, yeah, so I suppose by the time you get people in and you do the pre-dinner and the dinner and the...
And the boat day and the...
Yeah, no, it is. I always just hope that people have something to do after they've had these weddings, you know, because it's such a big project to manage that then...
Having an event background myself, I've always found it very exciting. But I have to say, I was a bit anti these destination weddings at one stage, but I've realized the value of them now, especially when you have people living abroad and you don't get to meet the work friends or the other parts. So if you have a week together, okay, you either love or hate each other and then you've got no choice, but it does give you a little bit more connection with the rest, with the extended family.
That's it, and going forward into the married life, because it does change, no matter what you like to think, it does change. 100%. It does change. What is considered rude at any sort of function, any sort of event? Do you smoke in public? Do you swear in public? Do you, what's the thing that you're just like, you can tell they're a foreigner, they just, what's that thing?
Well, I'll start with saying that one of the things that we often find is people think it's rude. Why do the African people shout so much? Why do they talk so loud? And one of it is if you whisper, you're regarded as skinnering or talking behind somebody's back.
Okay.
So if you're at an event and they see you in the corner, what are they talking about? That's kind of rude. You don't go into the corner and do that. Obviously, things like being on the phone. Smoking, I think now, is also very dependent on the group of people that you're with. I mean, in some traditions, when a child is born, they'll smoke a cigar or a pipe, and that's part of it. Rudeness in terms of is not pronouncing and announcing yourself to the couple and the family. You know, it's very important to announce yourself, let them know you're there, give them your greetings. Mm-hmm. And also very important to say thank you afterwards, which I find a lot of people don't do so much anymore.
Yeah, I'm horribly shy. Mm. And so I sort of just like to wave and leave. I'm always told off for it.
Yes.
Always told
off. Really?
Yeah, I just want to sort of leave them to it, you know, like, no.
When I'm leaving, it's the start of another party.
Well, that's the thing. It takes an hour to leave the room. So you have to sort of plan before, you know, way before you want to leave,
exactly.
To leave, to do this thing. Yeah. But anyway, I get told off for that all the time. What about being gay in South Africa? Is that an acceptable...
It very much depends because in it is acceptable and it's very, we're an open society as far as that is concerned. However, there are some societies that don't see it. So I wouldn't say it's across the board acceptable. We do allow gay gay marriages. We do allow gay relationships. And, for example, in the workplace, being gay is accepted. However, depending on if you come from a very much a stauncher background, it can actually be, it could be, you could lose your life, you know.
Ouch. I mean,
and
okay,
in so parts of, in parts of Africa, not so much as in South Africa, but parts of Africa, it's really a problem.
So do your research if you are going to be
trapped. Careful, you know, how, be careful how you expose yourself. Mm.
And that's, you talk just there, not on a different track, exposure. Do people cover up when they're dressed? Or is it very, you know, you've got the body, show it kind of thing? Or is it, no, you're in the city, cover up? Or is there any sort of, because I've even noticed in Malta, it's getting, quite something that, you know, and I was quite wild in my nightclubbing days, but then I wouldn't have worn that during the day, you know. And you, so is it somewhere where we have to consider what we're wearing during the day to be respectful to, you know, cultures and monuments, et cetera, et cetera? Or is it like, meh, it's hot, do what you like? You
know? I would say that by nature, South Africans are conservative and respectful. However, if you've not been exposed to that or taught that, then how do you know any better? Mm. So we do, we're quite good at talking each other out, you know, and saying, listen, you know, behave.
And so we're coming literally, sorry, to the end of the program. And so just the last thing we sadly have to talk about is the funerals.
Yes. Well, those are actually not normal, always a sad occasion.
Okay.
Really quite a big occasion. And I mean, I think that in virtue, South Africans often spend more money on their funerals than any other occasion
and
in their life.
Would we wear black to a funeral, or is it colour and it's dependent
on
the family?
It depends. And the family will often tell you, because if it's a cultural thing, some would wear black, some would wear white, some would wear colour. And putting somebody to rest is very, very important in the culture. Obviously cremation has become a big issue, more popular thing, and not necessarily having something rememberable, but Garden of Remembrances are a thing. But we have a problem in that some of our graveyards and that gets vandalized. So.
Ouch. Well, that's not a nice note to end on.
No, but
thank you for telling us a bit more about South Africa's etiquette and traditions here on The Good Manners Map with me, Monique Chambers. Thank you very much.